They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
It's a rare condition in this day and age to read any good news in the comic book page. Love and tradition of the grand design. Some people say it's even harder to find as days go by. It's the bigger love of the family.
Don't ever do that.
And I won't, providing we get 5 new patrons by next week at patreon.com/majorspoilers. My gift
Save
to you,
this,
my holiday gift to you is 7 more verses of the Family Matters theme song for
Hell.
You, unless we get 5 new patrons by next week. Patreon.com/majorspoilers.
Legion of Superheroes number 302, Family Matters. Published August 1983. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art Keith Giffen on layouts and Larry Malstead on finished art. Synopsis: the Legion is betrayed, while an angry brother may spell doom for a founding Legionnaire.
So here, finally,
yes,
we get a story that I'm super familiar with in about 15 years, when it's retold in the second volume, where Lightning Lord and Lightning Lad and eventually Light Lass all have their big family issues. And that is that's what's going on in here. Except, I will say, the opening pages of this volume did kind of throw me off for just a moment, because it opens with Block and Timberwolf sitting down having their conversation. And I was really expecting this for Timberwolf to evolve into, oh, that reminds me of a time. Let's look at the Recordo tapes. And then it turns into a flashback episode.
Right.
Or a lost tale of the Legion, or whatever that they call those.
Yeah. I really like how it opens with this weird friendship that is really developed, because that first page is so cool. I know you hate Block's costume, and I really do.
I don't like that.
I hate Timberwolf's gray costume.
Yeah, that doesn't look very good either.
But they're clearly at ease just hanging out, being friends, and then of course somebody smashes into Legion headquarters and it's time for the fighty. And it's neat to see that, because Timberwolf is immediately ready to crack skulls.
Yeah.
And he runs off, and Block is like, oh, right, I shall follow you.
Yeah, the problem with Timberwolf's gray costume is any time that he and Block are in the same panel together, you run the risk of the costumes melding into one another and not having enough contrast or offset. That happens on the next page when they're going into action and Dawnstar is going after the electric guy that has that's busted through the thing, because she's wearing a yellow costume against a yellow background. And so it really doesn't work. All you see is these two legs and some wings.
Now, are you reading the reprint version, or are you reading the original?
I am reading an original version.
Okay.
Of this. So it is. It's not her brownish costume, which I prefer a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a question for you. As they're running off to go join the battle, Timberwolf says, "No problem, Chunky. Just move."
Yes.
Does that bother you?
That doesn't bother me, because Timberwolf, They went through this whole thing of, I'm a lone wolf. I follow my own rules. And part of the reason why is he's a jerk. But Block is so patient that being called Chunky and Rocky and Pebble Brain and all of that feels almost, from Timberwolf, like that backhanded admission of affection.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if he had have said that maybe to Bouncing Boy or to, you know, like Zephyr from the Harbinger Foundation, maybe. I mean, if it was a character who's definitely drawn to be a fat character, I probably would have a problem with it. But here I feel like, you know, with, you know, it's Block. And of course, this is at a point where Giffen is drawing Block very tall and very lean.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of fills out later. So.
Yeah, no, I like him in version 2, where
Levitz and Giffen said that in their estimation at this point in the Legion, Most of the Legionnaires are, you know, 19 to 25. They say that Block, in their mind, was 12. He, you know, he's a very young dryad. And so they're trying to write him as a kid. And I feel like go through. Yeah, they're kind of having him go through puberty, though, because he started off as weird and angular, and then he got some pieces knocked off, and now he's in a growth spurt, and then he's going to get thicker.
Yeah.
As he develops. But, you know, that's also one of those things where this is the issue where we start to see it creeping in. We start to see the first real big indications of Giffen's fascination with the work of Jose Munoz, which is about to take over his art style. And Block doesn't show it quite yet, but there is, as we go into the story, there's a point where Lightning Lord, by the way, it's Lightning Lord,
right,
has a shot where his face is all in inky shadow, and you're like, oh, crap, it's starting. It's going to get weird, yeah, you guys. Yeah,
for some reason, I feel like I have seen this, and maybe it's because I've read stuff later than this, mm-hmm. but the depiction of Lightning Lord in just all electric, I feel like mm-hmm. I've seen that character design before, and I don't know if I've seen it in an old X-Men issue or somewhere else, but I know for sure I've kind of seen this kind of a design for Lightning Lord before.
It's new to the Legion. Lightning Lord has never been, you know, coded in this kind of lightning look.
Yeah, but before, I think I saw it maybe at a different comic, different style somewhere else.
Oh, sure.
I can think of a
couple of guys. I know the Hulk has a villain called Zax, who's basically a living electrical ball. And there's the Living Lightning, who was an Avenger, a West Coast Avenger briefly in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, I can't remember his name, but there's a lightning guy who shows up in the Team Titans, Killer Watt.
Oh, yeah, that's probably who I'm thinking. That's probably
exactly who you're thinking of.
That or Johnny DC. So anyway, it turns out that it is Lightning Lord that is attacking the Legion HQ, or actually the Legion satellite. I don't know why they're not on planet, but they are in above Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that plays a big role in a moment. But first, we're going to cut away to the legendary planet of Weber's World, the planet of bureaucracy.
Weber's World. That's where you put all of your middle management suck-ups.
Oh, yeah. They just hated bureaucracy so much in the future that they bundled them all up and put them on their own planet and made them live out their days there.
Yeah. But the thing about Weber's World that's fascinating here is that...
It's the Death Star?
We've seen it before, yeah, but we've never seen it be the Death Star. And it is literally drawn here as you can almost see the little tower turrets shooting at Luke and Wedge.
Yeah.
It also gives us the first background where Jan and Siobhan are on Weber's World to try and find some, you know, or passing through Weber's World, excuse me, to find some information. And they're on their way to Imsk. And you do have that.
Weird. It's like almost like we haven't heard about Imsk for like 10 years now. Imsk.
Something else that's interesting. As he flies past, there is a Legion team on Weber's World.
Yes.
And Element Lad deliberately does not signal. And he's like, normally I'd let the team know that we're in the vicinity, but in this situation... I guess not. Dun, dun, dun.
So all he does is the traditional, he just tips his wing a little bit as he flies by.
Right. That thing actually has wings too.
Yeah, it does. And I make a comment. I don't know if it's this issue or the next issue where the Legion cruisers finally go from looking like Star Trek to looking like Battlestar Galactica.
It's next issue with the Mark, I think it's 500 cruisers, but yeah, Giffen goes total wedgie. And something else that's interesting, during that Lightning Lad fight, it does start on Earth,
mm-hmm.
but then Lightning Lord heads up to Medicus One to find his brother.
Oh, right, to find where Santa Girl and Lightning Lad have been hanging out,
right?
At which point they attack, because again, I don't know how long you have to be in the doctor's office, but these two have been in the doctor's office for six issues now, so 6 months, and even before we find out what's going on, they get attacked. So even now, we don't know what's going on.
Yeah, they're still playing it coy about what's really going on. But
yeah,
I mean, come on. Come on. They're a married couple. They're having weird doctor visits, you know, and of course, you know, Ben, the brother-in-law crashes in, but
yeah, just like it does when you go for your regular OBGYN appointment. So
like you do. Hey, we I'm don't curious. Know that yet.
I'm curious what comic book Dr. Jim is reading in this, because my Interlac is a little rusty here.
That is The Flash. It's actually, if you look at the cover art, it's actually a representation of Flash 320.
Mm-hmm.
Which came out in April of 83, would have been probably on the stands when Giffen was drawing this issue. But if you look closely, you can see the lightning bolt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, Captain Invincible or the Eradicator tearing the Flash in half. But yeah, the Y-looking thing is an L. And the little hooky R is an F, which is why Interlac is so hard to read if you're used to like the standard 26-letter Arabic alphabet.
Yeah.
Because there are some false friends in there. Because I'm looking at that, and it looks like it says phone.
Maybe it is.
But yeah,
maybe it's the first Flash issue of Phone Home.
Yes, that's what it is. E.T. made it to the Legion.
Yeah. So Lightning Lord crashes the party. They're up on the mm-hmm. satellite, and he proceeds, even though like Saturn Girl is like, back off, you don't come into my doctor's appointment and interrupt things. And he just all out electrocutes her with his lightning powers. And I'm wondering, and I don't know if this is spelled out in the future or not. It may be, maybe it's not. We know that one of the twins that she's about to give birth to is Validus. And I'm wondering, you know, obviously there's Lightning Lad who is introducing his lightning genes into Saturn Girl. But I'm wondering if maybe this over electrocution from a Lightning Lord does something to mutate Validus.
I don't know that that is ever spelled out. We're not too far off from it. So do you remember when Darkseid was like, my curse shall follow the Legion? His curse is Validus.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. But so when, I mean,
Validus has that.
He is not a normal.
Lightning.
Yeah, he's not a normal child, right? I mean, he doesn't come out looking like a person and then somebody does something to him to make his brain stick out his head. And so
I think that is what happens, but I can't remember.
I looked at the issue recently, and it's just he's a baby that is lying swaddled up, and Darkseid picks him up, and you don't really get a look at him, and so you know it's not super clear on whether you know his attack has done something to the baby or to one of the twins. You know, it'd be nice if fetus Validus, you know, jumped in front of the other baby and was like no, and took the lightning bolt from his uncle. And then transformed into Validus. That would be, you know, like this heroic, tragic villain origin story. I tried to save my twin brother and it didn't work out.
They're still trying to hide the pregnancy. So
yeah, yeah. She's not wearing maternity wear yet. So
right. And they don't actually mention the word pregnant until I think 304.
Do they say she's pregnant? Because that, you know, granted, we're not in the 1950s.
No,
but certainly that is something that's can get some people riled up.
By 1983, she would not be the first superhero to have had a baby. Sue Richards would have had.
Oh, sure.
Certainly by that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to say 304. I can't remember if she actually says the word pregnant, but I'm almost certain that's where we reveal it, because there's a whole bit where Bouncing Boy and Duo Damsel are like, oh, maybe we should get to work. And I'm like, maybe you should.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So Lightning Lord, Lightning Lad have a battle across the space station until Lightning Lord knocks out one of the retaining walls and they all get sucked out into space. Oh, no.
Blows them out into space. Well, of course, they're legionnaires. Well, one's a good legion and one's an evil legion.
That, and they don't have to worry about re-entry because the Earth is coated by a plastic dome, which prevents you from falling all the way down to Earth, unless, of course, you're Block, at which point, as you land on the planet's dome and Lightning Lord attacks, it essentially just melts the plastic beneath him, and he goes crashing through.
I can't remember what it's called. The plasteel.
Yeah, it's like a
spin around the world.
Yeah. I do find it very interesting that, you know, as powerful as Lightning Lord is,
Yeah.
That he is just like giving everything he's got at Block. And Block is like, you don't understand. Your lightning doesn't affect me. And Lightning Lord is, are you kidding me? I will turn myself up to 11. And Block is just like, no, you don't understand. I'm an earth element. This doesn't work on me.
You're not hearing me. And, you know, it is interesting to see some of these limitations in play, because at a certain point, you know, we talk about him being enveloped in his blue lightning. Mm-hmm. He basically goes ham on his brother. And Lightning Lad is like, oh, you want to play for real, huh, Seymour? And all of a sudden we get Lightning Lad enveloped in yellow lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those moments that I really enjoy, because you don't think of Lightning Lad as being one of the Legion's fighter guys. You don't think of Lightning Lad necessarily in that front rank going toe-to-toe, even, you know, with his brother, but this is a moment where his brother is like, I'm going to overpower you and kill your family and attack your wife. And he's like, no, you are not. And it's really nicely handled, because what he really wants, what Mecht, the Lightning Lord, really wants is he wants to know where their sister is. This is that the first part where, you know, we're getting a really awkward point, and it does recur in that Rand's family relationship where I don't even know if they've revealed yet. Yeah, they have that. No. Mecht is twisted because he has no twin.
Right. Yeah, we know that already, but they haven't revealed where Light Lass is. In fact, I believe Lightning Lad specifically says, no, I don't really want to know where she's at. She needs to be on her own and do her own thing. And
not only am I not going to tell you, she hasn't told me, but
yeah.
But Lightning Lord at this point is starting to try and play their sister against them, trying to use her as like his twin and pull her to his side, which does come up again relatively soon. There may possibly be more Lightning Lord manipulating.
Yeah, I'm trying to push
things together.
I'm trying to remember, is there a my version, Archie Legion, where she does go over to his side, but then it turns out to be a fake heel turn? I'm trying to remember.
I honestly can't remember, because the there are a couple of storylines that made me really mad in the Archie Legion, and the handling of Spark and Livewire, where she was deliberately trying to one up him and steal his place. And of course, everything having to do with Leviathan are some things that really just torqued me off about that. So I don't recall it.
Yeah. I just seem to remember the Lightning Lord version doing that same thing. And she's like, maybe I will. And then I seem to remember, and again, if I'm wrong, fine. You can go ahead and correct me in the comments or on Twitter. But I just seem to remember her standing next to her brother with lightning coming off of her and, you know, Lightning Lad on the ground, and this idea that she has joined him, but that it turns out that it was all a ruse so that she could infiltrate. What's their criminal organization called? The
Legion of Supervillains, or
whatever.
The Lightspeed Vanguard, whatever they're called.
Yeah, whatever Lightning Lord and his compatriots are, Saturn Queen and
They're the Legion of Supervillains.
Yeah. That she wanted to infiltrate their organization to find out where they were. That's what I seem to remember. And if that's not a story, it should have been a story, because that sounds like a pretty interesting story to read in the pages of the Legion of Superheroes. Anyway, Saturn Girl is like, I told you to leave me alone. And she gives Lightning Lord a big old whammy and makes him go to sleep.
Yes. And it is really satisfying, because fight.
Yeah, it's a pretty good
crash.
Fight. I do like the colors in that, the blue and the gold, or the blue and the yellow. And,
you know, they're literally fighting on an invisible plate above the world. It's really nice. But, you know, the fact that Mech showed up and kind of just poleaxed her and then started fighting her husband, I like the fact that she gets to come back and be like, you know what, shut up. It's really nice that he took a pot shot at her and she ends the fight, at least in my eyes, because it reminds us that she is also a Legionnaire. She's not, you know, some weak-willed mama type. Not mentioning any names, called the Volume 5 Legion under Jim Shooter. I'm sorry. We'll
so
get there.
Block falls through the protective coating and starts to plummet to the gooey center. And Dawnstar goes in to rescue him. Mm-hmm. How is that possible? Because he's super dense and super heavy.
This is the point where Levitt starts to forget that.
Okay. I'm just like one page before he's like, I'm super dense and made of rock. You can't knock me out with your lightning. And then the next page, Dawn Star is just lifting him up without a problem.
Well, remember, he's wearing three Legion flight rings, or one really big one now.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
I think Brainiac made him an extra large flight ring.
Okay.
Either Brainiac or the 20th century version of DXL made him a special plus size Husky flight ring.
Husky flight ring with his Husky pants.
Yeah, the Husky flight ring. Yeah,
meanwhile, on Weber's World, Supergirl, Brainiac 5, Colossal Boy, and Shrinking Violet all discover that the Emerald Empress has taken over Weber's World from the inside. And
Sunboy, don't forget.
Oh, Sunboy is there somewhere. He's around somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause Sunboy has.
Oh yeah. He was left on monitor duty back at the ship.
Yep. And then all of a sudden when the eye shows up, there's an unconscious Sunboy lying there.
Yeah.
It's important that Sunboy be there because the next issue is going to get Sunboyish.
Yeah. So Emerald Empress revealed. I find it interesting that we have two members of two separate super villain teams appearing in the issue. I just find that fascinating.
And normally
when we have seen villain teams before, it's like, this issue is the Dark Circle. This issue is the Legion of Supervillains. This issue is the Fatal Five. And you don't see, typically you don't see them, mixing it up. And to be honest, Emerald Empress has always kind of been her own thing. It feels like she has always been just like, I guess I will hang around with you guys until something better comes along. And this is one of those moments where she's like, I see an opportunity that I don't have to involve these other bozos. I'm going to take it.
This, I think, is her definitely getting out from under the thumb of Dwayne Therock Johnson, who's, I think, is dead at this point.
Yeah.
But, supposedly. You know, there's also that moment where, you know, she's here and she's going to blast you with her secret eye. But more importantly, she's got a whole new outfit. And I think that's important for some reason. I don't know.
Who does?
That's kind of cool.
Emerald Empress. I hate her.
Doesn't she appear in this issue?
Yeah, she does. She's got that stupid turban that just is like, I just got out of the shower and my hair is still wet. I will wrap it in this turban that I saw at the as seen on TV aisle at Walmart.
She probably got it from that issue of the Legion where there was a genie.
Maybe because it does feel very turbanish. I just don't. Mm-hmm. I don't like that costume. It's a very weird costume, but hey, at least we get her as a villain.
Yeah, I do like a couple of the other costume changes that we're seeing because Element Lad has been for like 17, 18 years wearing that weird
green,
blue and is it green? Okay.
Yeah.
Blue, green, orange, whatever it is, that ugly suit. But he's now gone back to what's basically his old costume with instead of a big black letter E, it's an interlac E on his chest.
Mm.
So if you look at this costume, the layout and the use of the pinky parts are very similar to his original costume. That old pink and white one with, in this case, black in place of the pink. But I kind of like that because in my mind, pink is sort of Element Lad's signature color. And I never liked him in green. And I'm sitting here going, he's been in green probably longer than he wore the pink. And yet I'm still sitting here going, yes, he's back in a good costume.
Mm-hmm.
That's me.
Meanwhile, on Daxam, I'm sorry, on Darkseid World.
On a bust of Darkseid orbiting a planet somewhere in the nebula.
It is interesting that Mon-El is very upset because, and maybe it's not spelled out exactly, or maybe I skipped over it, but the impression is that Daxam is on lockdown and no Daxamite is allowed to leave planet because they're afraid that these superpowered beings are going to overrun the galaxy.
Yes. The United Planets is maintaining strict security on and off of Daxam so that no one from Daxam can all of a sudden show up, get superpowers and destroy a planet.
Yeah. That
is tough. That is hard because on the one hand, Mon is absolutely right. That is absolutely, I don't want to say racial profiling, but it's definitely like racist profiling.
It is, again, it's very interesting to look and see what happens in our time and compare it to, you know, the stories that are being told, because I think that history repeats itself and you see a lot of the same themes going again and again and again. Right. But there is a real kind of, you're right, racist, bigoted, fascist element of the United Planets, where it's just like, oh yeah, these Daxams, they're trouble. We're going to lock down their entire planet. Oh, these Durlans, yeah, they're trouble. We're going to lock down their entire planet. And that is just like super troubling that a planet
the authoritarian
of,
tendencies of the UP
are
creepy.
Yeah, it's very creepy, especially in this day and age where we are bombarded on every side about protected borders and caravans of immigrants coming and all of these wild tales that we hear to stir up political discourse. That it's almost like, well, these things were being echoed in the pages of these comics years ago, decades ago.
Yeah.
So that's
crazy guys with laser eyes who are bulletproof are coming to destroy your job and take your yogurt.
Yeah. So let's all round them up and put them into their own planet and keep them there. Yeah. That's not troubling at all. UP, not troubling at all.
Even a little bit.
Oh, we also get to see, did you have something else to say about that, about Daxam?
No, we're good.
Oh, I was going to say, we also get to see Leader Lady, Dream Girl. Doing her shtick again, her cold reading shtick, and her scam continues because, you know, everyone's like, oh, we just got these reports in and da-da-da. And she's like, yes, I already know, blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And everyone's like, well, what? And it's like, she's probably the captain. She probably saw the report before everyone else.
She can also see the future.
Yeah. Does she, though?
We know she can see the future.
So listen, I think, but I will say that this, again, is another issue of the creators really dunking on Dream Girl and trying to play her off as ineffective and dumb and blonde-headed, you know, the platinum blonde-headed girl.
I read it a little differently. I read it as Dream Girl intentionally playing up her flibbertigibbety, you know, her glam girl side so that people underestimate her, because you have this moment where she's sitting there and she's like, yes, we understand, tell them and everything. But then she's like, oop, broke a nail. But if she's already aware of the threat to the Lightning Lord threat, but she knows it's handled.
Mm-hmm.
She's already aware of the situation with Karate Kid. And I feel like in some ways, if you saw the future, if you knew what was going to happen. So let's assume that you really can see the future or bits and pieces of the future and something bad happens. But you knew it, and you kind of know how it's going to end. You know that everything is fine. Maybe you would just paint your nails and let people, you know, wander around and panic so that when it became necessary, you could take control of the situation. I feel like it feels to me like Levitz is trying to write her as somebody who is playing the fool rather than being the fool, but I don't know. I have never heard him say for sure which is which, but I also know that he really likes to write Dream Girl and he really likes to give Dream Girl these big dramatic moments. So,
yeah. And I think I've figured out the perfect voice for Dream Girl.
Oh God.
As a matter of fact, no, but I expect the Legionnaires on Earth can take care of themselves. Damn, Shug, broke another nail. These distractions will be the death of me yet.
So like she's that? Blanche from Southern, the Golden Girls?
Yeah, Southern Belle. Yeah.
Mm,
what do you think, dear listeners? Do you like that? Do you want more of that? Okay. You can get more of that when you become a patron at the producer level. Producer level at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Or maybe I should say, if you want to become our daddy at the daddy level, then I will record special messages of Dream Girl talking just for you. Check it all out. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. One final thing that we have to deal with in this issue, Matthew.
Yes.
That is Gigi breaking into the Science Police HQ to find some Durlan transfer tapes.
Mm-hmm. immigration files on Derlins who've come to Earth.
Huh, that's weird. Why would they need that? We already know that RJ Brand is around, and we already know about Chameleon Boy. It's almost like, why would we need to know their immigration status?
Yeah, I can't imagine why that could be in any way interesting. It's a good thing that Element Land is off on IMPS, or else I'd think that those were somehow connected.
It's also a good thing that we're going to talk about it right after this.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Legion of Superheroes number 303. Those emerald eyes are shining. Published September 1983. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by Keith Giffen. Synopsis: the Emerald Empress returns, and even Supergirl may not be powerful enough to stop her.
303.
303. That's where we be. And I must say that the cover for 303 is offering a Superman 3 movie sweepstakes. And oh, if I could shout back into time, I would say, run away, 12-year-old Matthew, run away now.
I will never, ever recover from that transformation sequence. That was just horrifying. Ugh, just terrible. When he turned her into the robot and she was like, beep, borp, oh no, my face is melting. Oh, terrible.
No, good. That's all good times, right? Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Richard Pryor, boom, gotta love it. Cryer at the peak of his popularity, boom, how can you not love it?
You think that's the peak of John Cryer's popularity was
there? Yeah, in 84, yeah, he was, you know, coming off of that Brat Packy thing, whatever he did, I don't know.
Ducky?
He was in like, he was Ducky.
All right.
And I think in his next movie, he was Gooseman, and then I think for a while he was Dead Meat, if I'm not mistaken.
So here in our opening sequence, we get Emerald Empress, you know, torturing all the members of the Legion of Superheroes who are there. Little do they know that Supergirl has powers, even though Emerald Empress is trying to knock her out with some kryptonite powers. Supergirl is able to use her super breath onto Brainiac's belt and activate his force field.
Let's take a moment, shall we?
Should Supergirl? I'm not sure we should. Yeah. Although I will point out, that we do get a third team revealed in this episode, a third villain group revealed in this episode, and that's the Dark Circle, which they do not play up on enough in this issue, that the Dark Circle is kind of behind all of this. They're like the hinge for Emerald Empress and probably for Lightning Lord later on. But they don't play that up enough in this issue. And I really wish that they would have had, you know, a bunch of people standing around and then all of a sudden turning towards the Legion members and then all simultaneously reaching up and pulling on their Dark Circle hoods, which, you know, there is a Legion of Superheroes movie coming up that features Supergirl in it. And it does feature the Dark Circle as part of the villains. Wouldn't surprise me if a scene that, like I just described, isn't in that movie.
It would be interesting. I feel like the reveal of the Dark Circle is great because I think it's been like 55 issues now that we've been toying with a heel turn for Ontir. Ontir the Lizard Man, and it finally came through. But the most terrifying thing, the scariest thing in this episode appears on page 2.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was my singing at the beginning of this episode.
Well, yeah. Page 2, panel 5, Sunboy's face eclipsed in shadow.
We got a fourth villain hanging around. Remember I said that blue shadow means that we got Eclipso.
It's not Eclipso. It's Keith Giffen starting to internalize the work of Jose Munoz. I'm going to point this out because it's going to keep happening, and I'm going to keep pointing it out because I remember I was very upset about this in 1984.
Why?
Because Giffen changes his entire art style.
I think that's okay. I think it's okay for an artist to evolve and change.
But he changes it into the art style of Jose Munoz. And that's the guy. Yeah. Well, I really like the guy too. But if you take panels of his work, if you take, you know, references that are so very close, you have given up your art style and you are literally, you know, making somebody else's art, and it's a problem, and it's going to keep happening. I'm going to whine about it, but it's okay because immediately afterwards, Sun Boy gets his face broken by the Emerald Empress.
Yeah, she just squeezes it, which I didn't think she had like a strength power. I thought all of hers were came from the fact that she was mind controlling the Emerald Eye, or the Emerald Eye was actually controlling her, and that just gave her that mental projection powers. I didn't know it gave her super strength.
It gives her apparently enough strength to shatter a human jawbone. I mean, it takes 8 pounds per square inch of force to break a bone. So, yeah, she's definitely somehow enhanced. And this is not like, she's not acting like the Empress we've seen before.
Oh, no, she got a whole new look. In fact, she got rid of her turban, her hair dried off, and she's letting her green locks flow in this in this issue.
And she,
which is also weird because the green, again, this is the problem when you have a limited color palette. Green. And did you ever do this in school where like you were doing a geography thing and your instructor gave you like a map of the United States and he's like, okay, color in all the states, but you can only use 3 colors and you cannot have any state of the same color touching. So like you couldn't have green for New Hampshire and Vermont,
Albuquerque,
because those two would be touching. And so he made it kind of a challenge to not only learn the states, but also to make sure we were, thinking and not coloring and get ourselves in a trap. But here we have blonde-haired Brainiac 5, which the yellow-green combination is also already a bad idea. But they intentionally in this issue have lightened up his skin, somewhat problematic. And then you've got him against a green background being fired upon by a green beam from the Emerald Eye. And it's just a super flat image. It just, there's no contrast or pop in that when you have that. Yeah, when you have the, or yellow is, a core color of green. But yes, it is basically that with only the purple jumpsuit. And it just doesn't work. It just is very flat colored.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
I feel like the layout of that sequence is trying to do something with it because, you are kind of boundaried by the blue and red Colossal Boy and Supergirl pages. And then you have, something in there. But yeah, it is an issue. And I feel like, I'm actually looking at one of the books and it has aged. And of course, comic book paper yellows.
Yeah.
So Brainiac and the Empress are like green on a yellow brown background. It's hard. It is hard to read.
Yeah. So
and
anyway,
then of course, Ontier is bright yellow.
Shook. Yes. Which again is another odd color. In my colored version, he is the same color as Brainiac's skin. So that's also a problem.
Really?
Yeah. So anyway, Supergirl activates Brainiac's force field with the, so she blows on his belt and then the sound effect is patoing as the next one. So read into that what you will.
She is on his right. So he's on her left and she blows to the right, which means that her super breath goes around the planet and comes back. And that, my friend, is impressive.
Yeah. Big fight ensues. Colossal Boy gets to do his thing. Shrinking Violet gets to do her thing. They're laughing and telling jokes to one another. Then they realize, oh no, Weber World is on a direct collision course with United Planet's main fleet base.
They're going to use the Death Star to destroy the United Planet's fleet.
Now,
we had a Kryptonian.
Now, I do want to point something else out here. Weber's World, in the wide shot where they're showing it about to crash into the space station, and it's got this main body, and then you've got all of these spheres with connectors attaching it to the main body.
Mm-hmm.
Does that remind you of anything recently that we may have read and discussed in Irritation?
Are you seriously making a COVID-19 reference?
No.
To Weber's World?
No. I am making a reference to the Brian Michael Bendis Legion run where, and I think it's where they take Superboy to the future. And remember, Earth is fractured.
Oh, that's right.
And so they have all of the different portions, like here's Aquaman World and here's Gotham World. And they're all connected kind of back to the Earth as they're trying to put the Earth back together. That's what that reminded me of. Not COVID-19. What's wrong with you?
Because that's terrible.
Yeah.
You said it was a circle with little things popped out of it. What am I supposed to do?
You're supposed to think of Legion of the Superheroes because that's what we're here for. Anyway, it's a good thing they have a Kryptonian with them because she can certainly put a stop to that planet.
Sort of.
Oh, she can't, because the mass of the planet is too much for her to handle. So instead, it's a good thing she knows pool, because now she can rocket out a trajectory and patoing the Weber's world and make it shake and cause the near collision to miss, at which point everybody gets their bearings. Brainiac 5 shoots a laser thing at the Emerald Eye. Everybody escapes. Colossal Boy definitely kills Lizard Man.
He doesn't.
I mean, he's flicking him with his giant finger, and the guy goes flying across at such a high speed that part of the metal construction of the frame of the Weber's world falls apart. I'm pretty sure he's dead.
I mean, toing. No. Toing. Yeah, that's meant to be funny. So we're supposed to laugh and go, tee-hee, because he went poing.
Yeah. So,
And the Emerald Empress is taken down by a special move. Oh, a karate move.
Oh, yeah. It's one that she obviously learned from a Chameleon Boy, because she says,
the Derlin Nerve Cruncher.
Yeah, I owed you that Derlin Nerve Cruncher, lady. And you're like, oh, okay. So, you know, everybody learns a specific skill. She obviously has met with Chameleon Boy, sure, and he's taught her the Derlin Nerve Cruncher lady.
Right, right, right. That makes perfect sense.
I mean,
it certainly doesn't have anything to do with the stolen Derlin files and the Himskins on.
Yeah, I mean, why would it? I mean, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, there's no reason why those would be tied together. You're right.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, what else happens in this planet? Oh, Dream Girl is constantly tired of, Jonah is completely tired of Dream Girl telling him what to do. And so he does a complete Will Eisner and spells stuff it out of the terrain,
which is pretty awesome. And I did have the same thought that he did when Dream Girl was like, oh, who can we spare? And sends Wildfire and Mon-El to stop a whole planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, they can fly probably at the speed of light. And Ultra Boy could certainly go with them, but Ultra Boy is also the more limited of the three, because he'd have to switch back and forth from speed to strength to invulnerability. I don't know. It's a whole thing. Now, I don't remember. Did Starboy have his beard last time around?
He did. Okay. Are you talking about in issue 300 or are you talking about last issue?
I'm talking about 300. I remember him having it in 302.
I believe he had it in 300. He's had it ever since he donned the all-star costume when they came back from exile. That's when he started sporting that beard.
Who, what, exile from where? What?
Remember when he, when Starboy killed that guy and they're like, you got to get out of the Legion.
He did not have a beard. He had a buzz cut and he was clean.
No, that's when he left. That's when he left. But when they came back, that's when he was sporting the new costume and the beard.
Now,
I think so.
No. Because when Grell was drawing the book, he had the Starfield uniform with a deep V down the front, and he was clean shaven with a buzz cut. He had a square head.
He's had this beard for a while now.
Mm.
But he's also been in the background, so he hasn't had much time. You know, he's too busy playing Dungeons and Dragons with his friends. You know, he's too busy playing them Vidya games. If he'd only get up and work every once in a while, maybe he'd have a little bit more respect and get a move up into the front of a panel instead of the back of a panel.
Yep.
Anyway, go ahead.
Colossal Boy has a couple of moments where he's like, oh, Shrinking Violet's like, all the secret files are over there. And he's like, boy, I sure am glad you're doing your homework, girlfriend, Shrinking Violet. Who's my friend?
Wait a minute. Well, okay. I may be jumping ahead a little bit. I'm going to just not say anything. But there is something that's said in about three issues that surprised me because I didn't think it was announced anywhere. Mm-hmm. But yes, there is a thing, boyfriend, girlfriend, that should take people by surprise. Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyway, I think there's an epilogue where we finally get to see. And this seems like
pronounced epilogue.
What is that? I mean, it looks interlac. My interlac is rusty. What does that say? It says in story. Part one. I feel like Enchantress and Karate Kid got the short end of the stick here.
Projectra and
Karate Kid get the short end of the stick here. Mm-hmm. Because when Bouncing Boy and Duo Damsel got married, we got a whole issue dedicated to it.
Right.
And when we did the is it Saturn Girl and Lightning Lad marriage, we got a whole issue dedicated to this.
They got a big, giant issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Karate Kid and Princess Projectra get just a...
They get an annual.
They get a one page little, hey, we're married and I'm crossing my fingers, which means this marriage really doesn't count.
They're not married yet. No, the annual has their wedding. It's coming up.
Oh, okay. It's coming up. All right. And yeah, then in epilogue two, everyone's like, ha, 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 ha. Isn't it funny that Sun Boy got his jaw broken and now he can't talk?
And more importantly, Brainiac 5 finally admits his feelings for Supergirl.
So, yeah, not only kind of admits, he kind of goes all in. Yeah. You know, he's like, you know, and this really feels like MRA kind of material right here. You know, Kara, I finally figured out what's been making me think so sloppily lately. Really, do tell. I should have deduced it more quickly. It's you. You're too damn distracting, lady. So again, I'm not remembering things maybe correctly, but I seem to remember that Brainiac has a super unhealthy obsession with Supergirl to the point where she has to file a restraining order and says, you must stay 1,000 years away from me at all times.
No. However, he did back, I believe, in Superboy 204, build a robot version of her that hung out with him because he was so in love with her. But she, and from their very first appearance, if you go back.
Oh, no, I know that he's kind of had a thing for her, but this.
She had a thing for him, too.
Yeah, but this just seems to be a little bit more menacing and a little bit more. I don't know.
It is. It's really, and again, it's another example of those big pools of shadow for drama. But it comes across as giving him almost a Kubrick smile where he's like, full metal jacket. I'm just like, no, Brainiac, stop it.
Yeah, it's a little creepy. I'll be honest with you.
It does get brought up again a couple of times. So, yeah, I do like it, though, because it's kind of an example of how Brainiac is not good with the emotions. And he's trying, honestly, I feel he's trying to tell her something nice. He's trying to tell her that I'm thinking about you. And
I've been thinking about you, Supergirl, a lot.
But it comes out as I can't do my job because you're here in your little shorts and your.
Well, she does not seem to take it well, though, in her reaction.
She looks very upset. She's like,
yeah,
very like, hurt.
Oh, I thought we were just going to be like friends. And then he starts his weird stalker obsession, leaving a rose on the car door.
I don't think that's the case because
No, probably not. I mean, you're probably right. It just feels like. In today's world, that's exactly where they would take that storyline, is he becomes a little bit too obsessive.
It feels like she was really enjoying, you know, their renewed sort of friendship and maybe hoping again for romance. And he's said that in a way that makes it seem like he's not interested. And I feel like she looks disappointed. But, you know, again, hindsight is 20/20. It's hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's nice to have a Kryptonian back with the Legion. Even with Mon-El in play, for some reason, having a Kryptonian, it just feels like...
Well, Mon-El is not a Kryptonian. I mean, the Daxamites and Kryptonians are two separate entities completely.
They are not two separate entities. They're cousins. Daxam is a Kryptonian colony.
Yes, but they, you know, a total different planet, total different evolution, totally different. That's why you can have them both on the same team.
And Mon-El is immune to kryptonite.
Plus he's like super, super old. He's older than Supergirl.
But he's still physically only 17. That's how he got on the team. Even though he's 1,026 now.
Yeah. Which still makes him the youngest member of the team because, you know, that weird thing that they won't certain planets have their de-aging. Technology.
Right. You don't get out of grade school until you're 92 in the future. That's terrible.
All right, that wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that little nerds can grow up and be successful because 303 features a letter from Fabian Nicieza, who becomes a comic writer in a few years.
I think we also learned that when you start thinking about IMSC and data tapes and immigration records, things are going to start making a whole lot of sense in about two more issues. So stick around.
And we learned that monitor duty is so important that you can make out with your wife and her exact duplicate while you're doing it. And that's why the Legion can't have nice things. And
that's why the Legion needs to hire a new HR. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us this week. We certainly appreciate all the kind words that you send us on the Twitter. Thank you for the Follow Fridays and all the other things that you do out there. We certainly appreciate it. And if you would, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. We appreciate the support over there as well. So until next time, I'm Reginald Vell Johnson.
Did you do that?
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.